sit back and get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf. Welcome back, Dynamic Golf listeners. I'm your co-host, Tim McElvanna. And with us today is Sean Klotz. Sean, hey. Tell us about a great conversation that we had with Pat Lang today.
Hey, T-Mac, and hey, listeners. This one was fun, T-Mac. This was one of our kind of good gets, we'll call it. You know, pretty exciting to get Pat Lang. She's a superintendent at Oakley Country Club. He's been up here in Watertown, Mass. For 14 years as a superintendent. And I think for our listeners, T-Mac, I think the best thing about this one is there's so much insight into kind of the behind-the-scenes part of what Pat does on a daily basis, kind of how he runs his staff, how he runs the facility, the interaction he has with the head pro, Scott Johnson. His boss is the Greens superintendent, or the Greens committee chairperson, sorry, and that's typically a member at Oakley, an unpaid position, but people that just have passion for Oakley and the golf course. And I think the thing that the listener is going to get is basically, you know, how much passion you have, to do Pat's job, to be a superintendent. You know, we've seen it with people that we've worked with, T-Mac, at our different facilities in Tampa. You've worked with some good people. You know, you actually started kind of in the superintendent world, didn't you? Or kind of the grounds crew world?
Yeah. As a young man, my father, encouraged me to get into, the agronomy side of the game of golf, being that, baby boomers were going to be coming around. He thought that maybe me being a superintendent or a groundskeeper would be a very good way for me to make a living, since I was a person that liked being outdoors. And I just found that, in the end, I kind of like being indoors and being on the other side. So it was kind of interesting to see how Pat went from wanting to be on the inside, you know, thinking he'd be in the pro shop, to being outside. And it's just amazing how this game of golf can transverse, you know, the way that you look at things and give you a great career in many different ways.
No, it's so cool. There's so many different opportunities in the game. I think some of the things that we learned about Pat that I didn't even know, because that was like the first time I really sat down and talked to him in the 3 months I've been up here, because we do different jobs. You know, I'm inside in the pro shop. I'm running tournaments, helping out, teaching, and he's out there outside making the product that we have to sell or to, you know, give to our members, type of thing. He's making that daily on a daily basis and as good as he can. So he's got resources, which is great. Oakley does give him resources. That's always a good part of a superintendent, to be able to have the tools, the resources, the staff to be able to execute what he's trying to do. And he came from, you know, it's funny, T-Mac, as I think back now over the first 3 months of being up here at Oakley, I get this question a lot when I first got here was, hey, Sean, really nice to meet you. Where are you coming from? You know, where are you coming from?
Yeah.
And I keep saying to people, oh, I'm coming from Tampa. I've been a head pro and superintendent at different golf courses, but honestly, what they're kind of looking for is like, what golf course did you come from? What facility did you come from? Because this is such an established and elite place that a lot of this ex, you know, assistant pros and ex, even superintendents, like they came from lineage. So Pat's lineage is pretty established. Like he started, he came from Red Tail, which is a fantastic golf course out in the western part of the Massachusetts area. I believe they held a U.S. Public Links, maybe qualifier, or they might have held the entire thing there. So he came from there kind of directly, but he's also worked at Taconic, which is another great golf course in the western part of the state. And even back in 98, he was telling us he worked at the Country Club. Right, that's Brookline, Mass.
Yeah, where they just hosted the U.S. Open a couple years ago.
U.S. Open, the Ryder Cup is what he was there for. That's back in like 98. So he saw that whole prep. He was there for about a year prior to the Ryder Cup. So he was able to kind of witness the prep for that type of event. And that was just a great thing for him to be able to kind of see and then have that experience, bring it to what he does on a daily basis over here at Oakley. So I think that's one of the coolest things. He went to UMass agronomy side.
Yeah. Great school.
And, great school. And, the other thing that kind of hit both of us, as we talked about this after T-Mac, you and I, the number of people that are some of the kids that are applying has really dwindled to the agronomy side.
Yeah, I was very shocked in the numbers of when he started. It was in the hundreds, and now it's just a handful of kids.
Like in the tens or something, right? He said tens or 15s or 20s.
I wanted to say it was almost seven or under 10 or
Yeah.
something like that. But the number, whatever it is, it's very small. And the big part is if we don't get those people out there and, enjoying this job and not making them slaves of the job, and getting these people, we're not going to have a product anymore. We've got to have leaders in that industry. We've got to have people that want to be superintendents. And we've got to make sure that we highlight those people and make them sure that they feel welcomed and, committed to what they're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you know what? I think we've talked enough, T-Mac. Let's let our listeners have their insight and just into a great conversation with Pat Lange at Oakley Country Club. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you so much.
With, hey, this upcoming tournament's coming along
Yep.
too, right? So
Yep.
that relationship, I've always been lucky to work with good superintendents too. Definitely not at the level that you guys are at currently as far as the budgets, we'll call it, and also the membership. But just talk on that a lot because he's been here for 24 years. You've
Yep.
been here for 14, which is just, T-Mac, that just shows you what Oakley is, by the way, right? If these two guys have been around for this long, how good this facility is. So.
Yeah.
I could probably count on one hand in 13 years here where I've had a disagreement with Scott, and it wasn't even with Scott. It was with one of his former assistants.
Okay.
And it was actually probably more of a misunderstanding. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if Scott asks me to do something, we're going to do it no matter what. Because if I ever ask him to do something, he does it. And that's a give and take that maybe a lot of pros and supers don't have, which is sad because, I mean, let's face it, this, if you're not a team, forget it. I mean, you can't, you, I have worked at clubs before where the superintendent didn't like the pro and the pro didn't like, and I just don't get that. I mean, we're all here for the same reason, to make
Absolutely.
this golf course really, really good so that the members are happy. They're paying our salaries, so whatever they want, we're trying to give to them. So if the pro and the super and the GM or the clubhouse manager aren't on the same page, there's going to be problems. Me and Scott have been, yeah, I mean, he's a golfer. I'm a player too. We've won the Pro Super together. We probably should have won it several other times, but I probably choked it away. We play golf at times during the season whenever we can. We both are sports fans. We just get along. We hit it off right away, and it's been that way ever since. I don't want him to write. He's telling me he's going to retire maybe 4 or 5 years right here. I'd love him to stay for 15 more because I'm afraid what the next guy's going to be like. Maybe it's you. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see.
We have a great dynamic here. He unfortunately he doesn't text message as well as I do because he's about 10 years older than me. He hasn't gotten into that yet. Other than that, we communicate great and. It's been great since ever since I've been here.
Do you carry your phone with you?
I carry my phone with me.
Okay.
All times.
It's funny, T-Mac, because Scott doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
It's one of those things, again, T-Mac, you would understand this. Like, if you carried your phone all day, remember, were you given lessons for 6 hours a day, right?
Oh, yeah.
You just can't because you have to
Right.
pay attention to the
Right.
person in front of you.
Right.
And from the customer side, member side, build the relationship with the people in front of you. You can't be looking at the phone. So he does it at the end of the day, type of stuff. But I understand why Pat would get.
Well, on a superintendent level, you don't want to be talking on the phone when you're on the golf course because members will see that and they're like, what the hell is he doing? And you're trying to talk low and it's just a bad look. So if someone calls me, I almost always throw it to voicemail and then shoot him a text right away. And that's where Scott's like, answer the damn phone, will you? And he's right. I should answer it more. But a lot of times I am on the golf course. But it is a little different. Like, you guys don't even have your phones. That's how I communicate with my assistants because we can't do we have the radios here and we have a lot of problems with interference from the airport with our irrigation system. So I just went strictly to cell phones. It just makes it a lot easier because everybody texts.
Oh, that's great. T-Mac, you got some questions? I got more, but
I was wondering, what are some rewarding aspects that you've been, at the golf course? What are some rewarding things that you've seen as being a superintendent there, especially with the members and all that? What have
Maybe
you kind
some
of
of the
experienced there?
projects you've been able to accomplish, type of stuff.
Yeah, I always look at it. I don't look at success until August 15th every year.
Okay.
So if you get past August 15th, and that date might actually be expanding now because it does stay a little warmer throughout the summers. But I always looked at it, if you didn't lose any turf, if you didn't have a problem with a green, if things were looking decent by August 15th, then you could take a sigh of relief and appreciate the product you are giving to this membership. So even though I do take a ton of pride in how this place looks on weekends and how this place looks for events and tournaments, there's always the what if aspect of this job because of the environment. You can't control what the weather's going to do. You don't know if it's going to rain. You don't know if it's going to be 95 and humid. You don't know what's going to happen. So it's kind of hard to look at it in June and say, oh man, this place is awesome, because in 2 weeks it might be different. And that's a fact. You know, you just do not know. If you sit back and, you know, put your arms behind your head and say, I did it in June, that's when problems happen. So usually at the end of August is when I will say another great job, another great year. And then I sit back and I reward myself by playing more golf because that's what I love to do. You guys as golf professionals and me as a superintendent, what's the one thing you love to do? Play golf. What's the one thing you never do? Play golf. So we're in the worst possible business.
Right.
The game got us here.
You
should have got into finance or insurance. Exactly. Because all my buddies who are in finance play way more golf than me.
Yeah. Tim, when I was going to talk about basically how many staff do you have, Pete and Pat? How many staff do you have? How many do you kind of keep it revolving? Is it changed seasonally a little bit during the winter versus the summer?
It changes seasonally. Sometimes we have 8 full-time guys.
Okay.
That stay all year. And that has increased. I've explained to my committees and the board.
Yeah.
Listen, if you want solid help, you need to offer them full-time.
Yep.
So we've gone from 4 to 5 when I first started up to 8.
Okay.
And they stay year-round winter, help with the plowing. And yes, some people can look at it and say, well, that's kind of a waste of money. There's not a lot of stuff to do in the winter. It is, but it pays off all year long when you have a solid core of guys.
Yeah.
And girl, that's right, and Aaron. We have Aaron now.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual, but yes, I can't forget that. We have a seasonal staff, which brings us up to about 20 in the summer.
Okay.
And that's good for us. And that will vary. Some guys leave, some guys come back. I've got a solid crew of guys that come up from Rhode Island and New Bedford, and they've been coming up here since I started. There's golf courses all over the place from here to there, but they like coming here. And we like having them because they are as reliable as it gets. They know the golf course. We've trained them throughout the years. None of them knows what a 7-iron is, but they actually understand the game a little bit now. So we've been lucky at that aspect to keep the staff that we've had for the most part intact over my full 13 years here.
And that's important right there. That's vital right there to have a good crew. You know, that's very
You're only
important.
As good as your crew. That's a fact.
Right. So, let me ask you, Pat, in your opinion, what role does the golf course play in creating a welcoming and inclusive environment for all golfers there at Oakley Country Club?
Welcoming and inclusive?
Stressful right there, too. Stressful one.
Well,
Product
all right, ask it again. Did you say for new golfers?
No, just what, you know, what does the course do to kind of include people, the environment? How does it make it welcoming? How do you see Oakley make it very welcoming to its members and the environment to the area?
Do you make it harder, like during tournaments? Do you make it easier on certain days or, you know?
It's conditioned really well. Yeah. So, and that's because of the finances we're given to do it. So golfers that come here immediately are rewarded with really smooth greens, really fast greens, raked bunkers. Everything else is pretty much kept detail-wise in check. So golfers that come out here have a positive experience that way. Where it might get negative is the rough can get a little thick. The greens can get sometimes too fast. But I feel like that just makes golf a little more challenging for them, and it makes people want to come back as well. But Oakley's not a very difficult golf course. It's only 6,000 yards long. So if you're not putting it on 12, And if you don't have the green, the rough a little thick around the greens, guys will come out here like Scott Johnson and shoot 62. We don't want that. We want guys to be around 71 if we can. Yeah. But I think
it's the only condition. It's the only guard of the golf course.
So that's the defense, right?
That's the only defense. Yeah. So, you know, if we had greens 10 and we cut the rough at 2 inches, the course would be simple.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's difficult. We try to make people think, hey, if you get above the hole, you might be in trouble here.
Yeah.
And that is the case.
Yeah.
But as far I think people enjoy coming to Oakley because it is very playable. I think it's a fun layout. Yeah. I enjoy it. Yeah. I played it a million times. Yeah. I hope I played a million more.
Yeah. No, it's such a good Ross design. We talked about that before, T-Mac. Like, he has some of the signature stuff, you know, even though it was only his first design, Donald Ross. But he's just got such signature, don't want to go long on greens, you know. He didn't have a – how many acres is it? Like 90?
It's the,
like,
the place is 96.
Yeah, it's small.
Wow. So it's tiny.
That's a tiny little – wow.
Think about Silverado being like 118, and Jovita is probably, what, almost 250 because it's got two courses.
Yeah, it's got two courses.
It kind of reminds me of the one in Rhode Island, Wanamoyset.
Okay.
The fences are at the back of the tee and at the back of the green, and then you see the roads.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Oakley is. We have nowhere to go. We can't make it any really make it any longer.
Yeah.
But Ross, I mean, it really is a cool design. But it is, I mean, technology is.
We haven't gotten up there yet, T-Mac, but you know, it's a 330-yard hole, number 8,
mm-hmm.
let's call it, 335, but you got to be in the fairway. Like, you know, like left and right are not, it's just, it brings bogey into place. So, and I can tell you 6 par 4s that are like that out here.
Yep.
They could be 350 yards or shorter, but the approach has to be done with a club. We were thinking about number 18 yesterday.
Yep.
You know, that's one of our more challenging greens.
Yep.
Period.
It's
a huge left to right slope, yep. T-Mac. And if some of our older players are hitting 140, 150 yards into that hole, that's a hard thing to keep on the golf course. But,
you really can't stop it.
No.
You can't. I mean, unless you're coming in with a wedge. And even with a wedge, it's still difficult to stop the ball from going on that right fringe.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you happen to be playing a cut, it's probably going to miss the green and go down the hill. So that's the defense of the golf course, and we have to keep it that way.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. What other projects do you have, like, in the future in your head? Like, I know it's kind of based on Mr. Kelly and Bob, you know, Mike Kelly is your green super.
He is. He's my boss right now.
Talk to us a little about that relationship, too. Like, how do you guys kind of work together?
Mr. Kelly's great. I think I should say something about all of them.
Yeah.
Mike Batista and David Kansian.
Okay.
Mr. Batista was the president when I came in.
Okay.
And he was he was the president when I was hired.
Okay.
He did everything I asked.
Okay.
And he was as good as it gets.
Right.
And Doc Kansian was my chairman for probably, I want to say, 7 or 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was kind of unconventional, but I think everybody really loved the play, so they kind of let the situation lie.
Gotcha.
And then he moved on. But Doc is still friend.
Yep.
Still friends with him to this day. I've gone down to Florida with him.
Yep.
He was essential in my success here.
You need that support,
I needed it. And he said, what do you need?
Yep.
We're going to get it for you. And they got it for me.
Yep.
And then after that, I had Dean Orfanos, who was nobody works harder than Dean in terms of what he wanted to do for this golf course.
Okay.
He had notebooks full of stuff he wanted to do. He was super organized. Great guy. When he left, I had Mick Fandetti.
Okay.
And Mr. Fandetti, as far as the landscaping aspect of this job, he has a degree in landscape architecture.
Wow.
He was awesome.
Okay.
And then it turned into Mr. Kelly, who has also been great. And Mr. Kelly doesn't have any background in golf, so he's learning from me.
Yep.
I learned from him on the numbers aspect, as he was an insurance guy forever, so he's on me on the budgets.
Yep.
But we have a good dynamic as well. I've never had a bad boss.
Yep. And that support is so
huge. I've had support,
I mean, whether it's the owner, was an individual owner like you had before.
Individual owner, Red Tail, with 5 of them.
Yeah.
And coming from them to here was a little bit different.
Yeah.
But funny as it be, my dad was the greens chairman when I was a kid at Wacona Country Club. who would have ever known that I'd be a golf pro superintendent?
Wow.
So that's good stuff.
So, what else do the members do to help you, Pat? I mean, are there any other, you know, people out there that kind of help, and members, what are they, what else they kind of help you with?
Well, they do, every once in a while, we do this thing called Divot Day, where members come out, they volunteer their time to fill every divot on the golf course, fix ball marks. We have members that volunteer their time to be on the grounds committee and the golf committee and various other committees. They don't get paid a dime. They do this on their own, and it's just for simply for their love and pride of this golf course. We also have certain members that are experts in other fields that might lend their time when it calls for it. Quick example, Joe DiStefano, construction guy. He's got a ton of experience with things like that, and landscaping that goes with it. He spearheaded that little project we did in between the ninth tee and the eighth green. Oh, wow. And he did that all on his own. I mean, I didn't ask him anything. He did it, and then he just coordinated with me. And we have tons of members who do things like that. They don't come to the top of my head right now. But Oakley is a very, very positive membership, and they definitely love their golf course.
Wow, that's great support right there.
Yep, it is. We have tremendous support here. I think we have a waiting list. I think there's a ton of people that want to join here, and I think that's because of it. I mean, you have members that enjoy being here, whether it's a social member at the pool or whether they want to play, you know, golf five times a week. I think we have a really good club here, a cool club.
I mean, just from a gentleman that's down here in Florida, I mean, you know, I hear that, you know, Scott Johnson, how well he's running things. I hear how well you run things like there. I mean, I'm just excited to get up there and see the course itself. So I'm sure it's just a first-rate facility that I'm just super excited to get up there and see real soon.
I think you'll enjoy it.
We'll all go out, and me and you will shoot 80, and Scott and Pat will shoot 74. So
maybe. So Scott had... Scott has four course records. I just want to say, I did hold the course record once.
Oh.
Now, I'll tell you why. The Ranch Club opened in Southwick, Massachusetts, and I want to say it was early 2000s.
Okay.
And I played it on the very first day it opened.
Oh,
and wow. I shot 76, and nobody had shot 76. The next day, somebody shot 70. But I did hold the course record for one day.
Perfect. There you go.
So, Scott, in your face, buddy.
There you go. Love it.
So,
love it.
Before we leave, I definitely got to hear about the owl story if we've got some time here.
Okay.
I've heard about this, and I'd love to hear it from you, Pat.
March 20th.
My first day up here.
Sean today. Just said, for a couple of days, we had this little guy we thought was a baby hawk.
Right.
And he was walking around, and clearly he was lost. And Scott had tried to – Scott built a little box and brought him up here because we were afraid he was going to get eaten by something. And then we'd bring him down during the day and hope the mom would take him. My crew was down raking around the pine tree down there, and they had looked up and saw a nest with a mom, a mother owl, looking down, looking for her baby.
Oh.
And so they came. So we quickly realized it wasn't a hawk. It was a baby owl. So Scott had it in a little box with some blankets, and he was feeding the thing. We brought it back down there. My guys threw a couple of ropes up in the tree. We used Scott's box. They created a little pulley system. One of them climbed the tree. I still don't know how he did it, because I was in the office the whole time this happened. I take no credit for this. This was Luis and Jose, my Portillo brothers. They pulled this little guy up. Jose climbed onto the branch, and I'm sure he was scared that the mother was going to attack him. Mother owls do not mess around. But she stayed away, and he pulled the little guy right out of the box, placed him in the nest, and we got down. We cleared out of there, and that owl survived.
Wow.
We watched it for the next couple of weeks. She was feeding them rabbits. She was feeding them whatever she could. You know, owls are savages. They just eat whatever they want. And we watched that owl turn brown, you know, from that white color to brown, and then she flew away. So she survived. We saved an owl here at Oakley.
Wow, that's amazing. That's going above and beyond, especially for the grounds crew. That's great.
Yep.
That's great.
They love their animals here. So we are environmentally friendly, believe it or not. I know people love to think, all you do is spray, and then we actually try to take care of the animals around.
That's great.
That was my first day, literally coming up to see Scott on March 20th. It was a Thursday. and some members called in because they were playing. It was probably 45 and rainy that day. Like, it wasn't pretty yet, but they just said, you know, hey, there's a hawk or a bird down there. And we went down and got it. And then, like Pat said, we put it in this box and we didn't know what to do with it, me and Scott. And there was another member here too. I don't know if it was Mr. Foldenauer, or there was some other member here as well, but we were talking about it. Scott got the kind of typical for Massachusetts, got the lady from like Tufts University, the Audubon Society lady came over and gave us all the instructions on
Oh,
how to
wow.
take care of it and stuff the next day. And then we see the video that Pat's staff had saved it and put it up on, and it's just an amazing kind of funny that, you know, one of those told stories that people need to hear, because it's they do such a great job throughout the entire year, but just kind of a good way to show the dedication of all the staff of what happens up here at Oakley. So
Definitely going above and beyond. Yeah.
so again, T Mac, another guest we could have on for another 2 hours talking about agronomy, and we didn't even get to like why you do certain things when you do. Maybe we'll do another one in the future
Sure,
of
sure.
sort of like, you know, I'm really interested in sort of the seasonality of what you do
Yep.
compared to Florida. One of the things I was thinking was, in Florida, we know what the weather's going to be. You
Yeah.
know, we know, right, T-Mac, from April to October, we know it's going to rain at 4 o'clock in the afternoon every day. So there's some negatives and positives to that.
Yep.
But then that winter season is usually pretty temperate. But so, you know, the argument down there is, do you aerify 6 times a year? Do you aerify 3 times a year? 2 times a year? What's the number? And we didn't really, you know, we didn't really get into that with you. But just bottom line is, you guys just do an amazing job every day. And you can tell that your leadership from your staff perspective, the respect you have from the members, that I want you to know from the people who come in the pro shop every day. I would say the speed of the greens is never a negative thing. It's only they think it's cool that they get to play a golf course that has basically tour like, you know, speed. And that's such a good anyway, so that's my stuff, T-Mac. You got anything else?
No, that's great, Pat. I certainly appreciate it. You know, being a guy that came up through the maintenance crew, I definitely I feel you. I know it's not an easy job, and sometimes it's you know, it's kind of tough. You get beat up a little bit, but what you guys do is amazing. And without what you guys do, we don't have a product. We don't have a job without you guys. So you guys are what makes this industry move forward. So thank you, Pat. Thank you.
Yeah, I understand that, but let's face it, without the game of golf, we don't have a job. So it's a little, it is. I understand what you're saying, but we both play pretty big roles.
Yeah.
Told you, the humble guy again. We got another humble one with us here. So good though.
So, but
Yep.
you know, just want to say thank you, listeners. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Pat, for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. We hope to have you on again, and would love to hear more about the seasonality, about what you kind of do over there on the agronomy side to take care of that course throughout the season. And we'll get into that later.
Okay.
T-Mac, I got one last question for
Yeah.
him, and this isn't just an Oakley question. It's probably a superintendent in general question.
Yeah.
What can the golfer do, Pat, on a daily basis? What could they do to make, not necessarily make your job easier, but continue to keep the golf course well in great conditions? My simple ones would be fixing divots, repairing sand, like bunkers, like just in a broad stroke, like what's the things that you would hope the players would do a little more often
So,
without getting personal?
two things. Understanding the difference between replacing a divot and knowing when to replace a divot
Yeah.
versus using the sand that we give you.
So you'd prefer them in Massachusetts versus Florida. You'd prefer them to take the dirt, the turf, and bring it back.
If you see a couple of roots coming out of the bottom of it and it has soil on it, stick that baby back in the ground. If it's kind of pieces and it's not really that thick, put the sand in there. And the second thing is, keep the golf carts in the fairways. All right?
Interesting.
Because people, the 90-degree rule is not a thing here. When you have 10, 15 yards of rough and you have everybody driving in the rough, that rough is going to die. But fairways, if you just kind of let them get onto the fairway, everyone will go wherever their ball is. And what that will do is make people drive in different spots.
Really
And then
interesting.
you won't see cart damage. The most damaged golf courses, believe it or not, have is from maintenance.
Okay.
Vehicles, okay. Mowers, it's from us.
Okay.
But the wear problems from golf carts is probably the second biggest. But if everybody knew how to replace a divot a little bit better,
gotcha.
Ball marks are ball marks. People yeah. just sometimes, yeah. they just don't get it. They're going to miss them. We replace them. Right. It's not a big problem.
Okay.
The problem is divots, especially when you have small tees like we have.
Yeah.
And keeping cart traffic yeah. all over the place versus in the same spot every single day.
Do you want the player to sand in the rough, meaning like when they hit a divot from the rough? Would you? That's what.
No, I would. I would always yeah. put fairway divot, sand it if it blows to pieces.
Yeah.
Rough divot, just put it back, no matter what.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's different grass.
Yeah.
It's different agronomy.
Okay.
It's not going to creep over in the rough.
Okay.
But chances that a ball lands in there are yeah. you know, if your ball lands on an old crappy divot that's been replaced, yeah. you'll be able to have a decent shot.
Gotcha. I've heard that from Jeff Sweet down there at Silverado a lot too, T-Mac, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, in the rough, and it's just funny because players are trying to do the right thing, so they put sand down in the rough, and it actually makes it harder to grow, like Patrick said, different grass.
Yeah.
Different consistency.
No, keep it on the fairways, tees, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we got to let him go back to his job. He's already passed his time, so... Dynamic Golf listeners, really appreciate you guys listening. Hope you had a good time, and we will see you on next episode.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
have
Pat.
A good one. Thanks, Pat.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, guys. Thanks, T-Max. See you.
You're welcome.
Good job, dude.
All right. So
he's going to be famous in a week.
I don't know.
He's going to be famous.
All right. Thanks, T-Max.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. He said he's in for the next one like 3 months from now or whatever.